This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
Good morning, Ottawa. It is 9:07. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts today. We're with you until noon. And today, the big day, parents. Finally able to book kids aged 5 to 11 for COVID-19 vaccines, bringing them some much-needed protection, but also some peace of mind for parents. It's also another big step more broadly in the fight against COVID-19. That is our question of the day at the bottom of the hour today. Have you booked your child's vaccine already? How are you feeling about it? Text us 580-580. I will take your calls and texts at the bottom of the hour. You can also call us then at 613-521-8255. Also happening today, the police services budget continued to be debated. It was put off yesterday at City Hall. The police force is asking for a $14 million funding increase for 2022. There was actually a protest last night on one of the on-ramps for the 417 protesting this funding ask, actually asking for the budget to be freezed for 2022. We'll hear from an organizer with the Black Diaspora Coalition coming up around 10:30 this morning. Also happening today, the throne speech. After hoping for a majority government when calling an election just a few months ago, Justin Trudeau returning for a third mandate, another minority. Barry McLaughlin will join us. He's from Transform Leaders. We'll talk about what we're going to hear today and what voters are hoping to hear for as well. All of that and more, but first.
Ottawa at Work, Big Five Stories.
It is time for the Big Five Stories panel. Joining me this morning in studio are CFRA's Chris Holsky. Good morning, Chris.
Morning. I spent an hour and 15 minutes yesterday on TSN 1200's This Is Wrestling podcast.
Oh, boy. Shameless self-promotion.
Talking about nothing but pro wrestling, again, for an hour and 15 minutes. I know, Andy, you were disappointed that you did not get an invite to this.
Of course.
But I'm glad to be in here doing some news talk.
Everybody knows that I am the biggest wrestling expert. The turnbuckles and stuff, they're great. Also joining
that's
us.
That's more than I've got,
yeah,
man.
That's all I got. Also joining us, CFRA's Matt Harris.
Hey, Andy.
Good morning, Matt. So, what was I going to say? Vaccines are opening for kids today. Now, it doesn't really affect anyone, but it does in the same aspect. Matt, I know you're a new dad, but vaccines haven't really reached that age
yet. We're at the 5 to 11 right now, so too young right now.
But how relieved in the same breath do you think parents are feeling right now?
Oh, well, I mean, I can imagine what I would feel, and so I think there is a sense of relief. And it's not, you know, everyone takes this a bit differently. I'm not, you know, stopping life out of concern, right? Because I feel like all the adults in my life are vaccinated.
Mm.
I come to work. Everybody that works here has had to be vaccinated and said that they are. You know, everyone in my circle of friends, I mean, it's not something you don't ask people at the door when they come into your house, but you've had those general conversations with people about, oh, when did you get your first dose, whatever. So I feel very comfortable in my social circle that everyone's vaccinated, but it's that extra level of protection, it's just a bit of peace of mind, right? So I'm not there right now. We're 4 years away from that. But I feel that sense of anxiousness. So I think seeing them booking that appointment, getting the shot, it would just be a sigh of relief. And then there's people who have taken it to the whole extreme, right? Can't see anyone, homeschool the kids. And that's not really even a judgment. I mean, you got to make your own decisions for your family or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But those people are probably feeling even more relief than just the casual, you know.
And this is
good to do it.
It is more of a flippant comment, but I've talked about how sometimes just in conversations, the COVID police are much more frustrating than the anti-vaxxers.
You're not wrong. I don't know. Like, there's got to be a happy medium somewhere. It's total extreme. Here's the thing, though, because I made this comment. A listener, actually, last time I was hosting the morning show, he had texted in and he said, you know, the person alone in their car with the mask on is just as frustrating as the anti-vaxxer. And I said, yeah, except that the person alone with their mask on in their car isn't really hurting anyone.
It's
a little bit extreme, and you know, you can laugh it off.
But that's the thing. It would be extreme if you were judging somebody, right? But like, I've done that before. Just, you know, you're going to the next spot or whatever. You're making a few stops.
You're halfway
there,
and you realize you're at a red light, and it's like, oh, I have my mask
on. Exactly.
Yours is under your chin right now.
I don't care what you think in the car next to me. But
how many people are being arrested or fined for practically disorderly conduct over going into a store and saying, you know what? Not enough masks are being worn by people.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd rather deal with that person.
But yeah, that aside, Chris, also, as I was mentioning, you know, back to the vaccine talk just about kids today. Do you think this is more broadly, or are you feeling more optimistic, I guess, just in general about the end of the pandemic? This is a large segment of the population that's so far been unprotected, but they're about to get that protection.
I would like to hear more from epidemiologists on what they suspect even this first dose going out into kids over the course of the next month could make, what difference it could create for our new case counts, which have been drifting higher in Ontario, or even hospitalization rates in the province, because it feels like we've been teetering on the edge, perhaps, of heading into territory that could be worse for Ontario. We had 700 cases plus for 3 days in a row. We still had 600 on Monday, which is typically a drop-down day. I think a week ago it was 400 rather than 600. And I'm wondering if just these first doses are going to make a difference in bringing things back down to a level people feel more comfortable with.
It's funny that you ask that. I had an infectious disease specialist from Ottawa here, Dr. Gregory Rose, on over the weekend. He was saying that, you know, he expects the vaccine uptake rate for kids will be a high in general, and that will generally help. But we are starting to look at the beginning of the end, I guess.
I think the dust will be starting to settle at the end of what we usually call the respiratory virus season, which is, runs between December and April. So by April, we're going to have a very good idea of what the post-pandemic future is going to look like. Endemic, you know, as a technical term, is defined by kind of backwards-looking data that we wouldn't know about for a couple of years. But really, we will have functionally will have gotten into the point of endemicity when the hospitals aren't being overwhelmed by cases, when we're not having large numbers of deaths, and we're not needing those large-scale public health interventions to try to prevent transmission.
So several caveats, of course, but in general, one epidemiologist locally is saying, you know, this is a great step, and we're going to have to keep looking at the numbers, but by the spring, we could be done with most of this stuff.
Even in Ottawa right now, taking a look at some of the data that was shared by Ottawa Public Health yesterday, they had new cases in the 20s, but resolved cases were in the 40s, so double the amount, roughly. Though testing does come in lower, again, it should be noted, Sunday into Monday. But hospitalizations went down again. We're talking about below 20 in Ottawa right now, where it looked like we were having a bump towards 30. And it's great seeing that number continue to be stable day by day. You just got to hope that that holds.
Yeah, steady progress, I guess. We'll leave COVID talk for right now.
Thank God.
The Ottawa Police budget, of course, taking a bit of a break yesterday from debate. It's going back to City Hall today. Police force asking for a $14 million funding increase. Some people not happy with that. Some councillors also, you know, a group that blocked the 417 last night. Now, their goal is to freeze the budget, not reduce it. But, you know, $14 million is a large chunk of money. So just, do you guys have any sympathy, I guess, in terms of for the groups that are looking for this funding freeze in the group that blocked the 417 last night?
Matt. Some of their ideas were actually quite interesting. A lot of them made me wonder how you're going to do that with a budget freeze, let alone a budget, you know, it probably requires a budget increase. But I hate the blocking of the highway for getting a point across. All you're doing is just kind of rattling the people that are in their cars and getting them upset, and maybe I guess that's what you tried to accomplish, but it's a bit of a frustrating experience. Although when you look at the list of demands that they had, there were some interesting things there about stopping police officers from responding to mental health calls, and, you know, finding better ways to deal with that. And there were a couple other ones that I thought, okay, some interesting ideas, but you kind of lost me when you went and pitched a tent in the middle of the road and on the way home.
And I will say that I think that is the point of their protest, they will say, right, is to cause disruption. But I think with the large understanding of what's happening as well, people do end up, you know, going onto the highway. They have no idea what's going on, and you just end up getting
angry. Well, the only reason you're not hit by a car, though, is because a police officer now has to work overtime to stop the cars from coming down the street. So, you know, it's an interesting conundrum that you've put yourself in when it comes to canceling or lowering the police budget.
No, it's totally fair. I have a feeling that the group not very concerned about police overtime budget for last night.
No, but they want the budget frozen.
No, I know. So, I know. I was just making a joke.
I get that.
Yeah, yeah. Holsky, do you have any sympathy for what these you know, the groups are looking for here in terms of how police are serving minorities in particular in the Ottawa area?
It's just like I do, and they do have valid concerns they're sharing here. As for if it's going to make a difference at the meeting today, specifically, I doubt it. With the draft budget already being submitted, no matter how many delegations are being thrown in front of the Police Services Board, I mean, we had 5 hours worth of talk, something like last night, with 55 people signing up. I don't think it's going to be enough to alter the plans for an increase this year. So the question becomes, if people are going to demonstrate against rising police costs, when is the next demonstration going to be? And the next demonstration before that? And how many are we going to see over the course of the next year before the next police budget is submitted for the city of Ottawa?
Well, and, you know, this conversation aside, I think Police Chief Peter Slowly has tried to implement a culture of change within the police force. That's what he would say as he's taken over this police force in the last little while. So we've seen still that there is some of that consternation out there between police and the minority, some of the minority communities here in Ottawa. So how do you balance that as Police Chief Slowly, as, you know, needing more money to fix things, but also trying to balance the needs and listening to the community as well? I know it's a tough question.
Listen, I mean, these are important conversations that need to be had. When I say what I said earlier, I'm not dismissing. I think, mm-hmm. like I said, I think they've got some really interesting ideas there.
Blocking
stopping
the
dynamic
highway.
Entries and mental health calls. I think there's some that I don't personally agree with, like the school resource program, but that's an interesting conversation to have, and it looks like he actually won that battle, so I don't know why that's on your list. But anyway, all that said, these are important conversations that need to be had, and that's on leadership at police, not even necessarily just the chief, but the head of the police services board, all of that stuff. But you pitch a tent on the highway and then tempers flare, and I just don't know what it accomplishes.
Honestly, though, I think a lot of the responsibility falls on the chief of police. That was one of his qualities is building up racial diversity.
Yeah, that's what we hired you to deal with.
He was hired, and if now we have demonstrations happening that are blocking the Queens and access to the Queensway. Be more specific here. You wonder, okay, so what's going to happen next? Especially again, if that budget is passed as it is tonight. Which it probably will be.
And just interesting, the last two texts here before we go to break. One on the opposite sides, obviously. It says, Mark on Elgin, hello. These protesters drive up the police budget because we have to call in resources off duty. And then Mike and Nepean block the road to draw media attention, or else you wouldn't cover it. So what do you think? Text us 580-580. Tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. We're going to take a quick break here on Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts. When we come back, we'll continue our Big Five Stories panel here. CFRA's Matt Harris. And Chris Holsky in studio with us. We'll be right back.
This is News Talk.
Welcome back to Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts, continuing our top five stories panel this morning. Joining us in studio, CFRA's Chris Holsky and Matt Harris. Okay, a couple left to get to here before the bottom of the hour. Just quickly, what do you guys want to hear in this afternoon's Federal Throne speech? Obviously, a lot going on for
everyone. An alarm
everyone
at the end of it to
right
wake
now.
Me up.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know, something to address inflation. I don't know if anybody's noticed the cost of everything going up, but what are you guys kind of hoping to hear this afternoon, Matt?
Okay, seriously, though, I have two. One of them is inflation. It's exactly that. Like, it's insane. I went to do groceries the other day, and I'm not normally, like, pay attention to the price of food guy. And it was at Costco. Fair enough. You know it's going to be pricier. But, like, you're expecting it to be something. And it was just insane. The price of, like, food, coffee, fresh fruit, the dairy section. I was like, I could not believe what was going on. So I'd like to hear something on that. And I know we're tired of talking about COVID, but what's the way out of this mess, right? Like, can we change the metrics? We finally adjusted the testing to cross the border. Now it's only 72 hours. I don't fully understand the scientific reasoning here, but I'm vaccinated. Now your kids are going to get vaccinated. When do we move on with our life? Like, some kind of a game plan here to address that. So those are the two things that that I'd like to hear from the government. I won't watch it live. I will probably fall asleep, but because it's boring and dry, right? They deliver the throne speech, but Cole's notes version, that's what I want.
Hey, but they knock on the door with the stick.
That's my favorite part.
It's Mary Simon's first. Who knows how she's going to read it, you know?
Maybe she'll do a dramatic reading
maybe
and capture my attention.
It's going to be dull. It's going to be dull. It's going to be unsurprising, just like every other throne speech. But you're asking me what I want to hear, so I'm setting unrealistic expectations for this one. I would love to hear the Governor General Mary May Simon say, "The Prime Minister resigns. Let's just get this over with now instead of dragging it out for a while. If you're going to take your walk in the snow, do it now."
I think he's running in another election. Not that you asked, but I've come to accept that the last couple of months.
One, we need some snow for him to take a walk in the snow, so be careful about what you wish for.
A little bit of snow, but real snow, right?
I want to get sidetracked for a second here. Honestly, you don't think he runs again? Or you think that he runs
again?
I
do, yeah.
Really?
I was convinced a couple of months ago before the election that he was just going to kind of disappear.
Interesting.
I don't know. I think he's going to stick around. There's a bit of an ego there. I think he wants to try for another majority, and he sees some infighting in the Conservative Party and sees a chance there.
See, and personally, just because I like federal politics, but just I find it kind of interesting not getting that majority. I think was a big blow to his future. You've got Krista Freeland kind of waiting in the wings. You've got the Mark Carneys, apparently.
Listen, it all makes sense. And two months ago, I agreed with you.
It's just interesting the kind of thoughts for the political future here. Chris, throne speech. Do you anticipate that we are going to see the opposition just kind of, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's here? Or are we going to have some...
cross the T's and dot the I's. It's like, look, whatever comes out of the throne speech today, the Conservatives are going to attack it. They need to get the attention off of them and off of their own vaccine status immediately.
Okay, quickly. Black Friday deals in Ottawa stores. I saw a story on CTV News at 6 last night. Lots of people are shopping looking for that deal already. Are you guys looking for anything? Any big deals or anything like that? Also, how are you kind of watching for Black Friday deals?
I'll be doing if I do anything, it'll be online. Yesterday, I bought Ottawa Senators tickets Black Friday sale. So,
Wow.
Got two games for the price of one.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Which was kind of cool. But in all seriousness, the big one for me on Black Friday is always electronics. But I'm looking around going like, I don't need anything.
Yeah. No, there are shortages on top of that, too. For example, if you're somebody, whether it's for yourself or for a child, if you wanted to buy a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Series X right now, good luck with that. Last time around, back in 2014, the last generation of consoles, a year after that, we were starting to see big discounts on those. But now you can't even get a console, period, right now. I think Black Friday hype, honestly, in Canada is dead. I know a lot of people are still looking forward to trying to find deals, but it was a lot bigger when it first launched after we stared through a glass window at the insanity that was happening in the United States and continues to happen now. And even then in Canada, it's not the same. We're down there. You have people fighting.
You're not punching anyone for a TV, Holsky?
No, when you walk through a door at like a big box store on Black Friday, you get a polite round of applause here in Canada from the staff. Yes,
it's not a spinoff of Fight Club in some kind of way.
No.
But I wonder too, just because we have been kind of home for the last year and a half, right? We have been trying to make our living spaces as comfortable as possible. If everyone is in that same situation, Matt, that you are, that, you know, I've already got everything.
I'd love a new TV. The old one's fine, though. Like, what do you...
See if you can get a Black Friday deal in a cottage or something like that. We'll see. Anyway, thanks, Matt. That's been our top five stories panel for this morning. Chris Holsey is going to bring us the news coming up at the bottom of the hour. On the other side, our question of the day. Have you booked your kids' vaccines yet? Today is the first day. How are you feeling about it? Text us 580-580. You can also tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. We're taking your phone calls coming up next after the news as well. 613-521-8255. This is Ottawa at Work with you until noon today. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts.
You're listening to Of the Day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
9:40. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts. It is time for the question of the day. You can text us at 580-580. You can also call us 613-521-8255. After months and months, parents finally able to book vaccine appointments for their kids aged 5 to 11 this morning. Much to their relief, for kids and parents, but also a big step towards ending the pandemic for everyone, as we've been chatting about this morning as well. Now, Shay is one of those people that was up early this morning booking an appointment and joins us on the line. Good morning, Shay.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, not too bad. How about you?
Great. Good morning.
So what was the plan for you this morning of attack? I understand you were getting your grandchild vaccinated.
It's actually my little boy. He's turning 5 in December. Geez. And so our plan was to... me and my wife to kind of split up and see who could get the quickest appointment or whatnot. But we were pretty happy to see we logged on at 10 after 7 and were able to do it on the provincial website at that point.
So you were kind of hoping to get in early too. I know we were saying that it doesn't open until 8 this morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know for my actual vaccine as well, I was able to do it, but it was only about 10 minutes prior to 8 a.m. for that one. So we were kind of shocked to see this was almost an hour prior, right?
Oh, yeah, especially with the demand that we were expecting this morning. Just for you, we know that, you know, even with little ones at home myself, just you've been dealing with a lot of school anxiety and protocols and things like that. So how much of a big step is this towards just getting back to some kind of normalcy for you and your family, Shay?
It's honestly, it's huge for us because we have a grandparent who's immunocompromised. So we've been probably a little more on the intense side of things than the average family. But our son, he's excited for it as well because, you know, we've been putting the pressure on him as well, just to keep grandparents safe and happy and whatnot. So it's a big relief. He's in senior kindergarten and he didn't go last year for junior kindergarten based on that. So it's going to be, to me and my wife, it's definitely a huge game changer to get back to being able to be more confident with sending to school, and also, you know, allowing a little more things outside of the box for us in the sense of play times or things like that with other families, skating indoors, et cetera, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Especially with someone immunocompromised, yeah, you have to be extra concerned as well. Just on that point of just, you know, for your son, we've been noticing, you know, that lack of, you know, social interaction because of all of this. Is it going to be nice just to for him to get back to, you know, being a kid and being with other kids?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it was obviously easier in the summertime, being outside, things like that. But as we move into the cold winter months, especially this morning with the temperature, I know he'll be happy to be able to have a little more leniency with regards to play dates or whatnot, because, you know, he's in that kindergarten age where he's been at school and there's some kids in his class that would have either been together last year at school where he wasn't, or have sports teams, things like that, where he wasn't being able to be a part of that, right? So he's missed out on some of it, but now we're hoping that I'll, you know, the pendulum will swing the opposite way for him to, you know, get back to normal, because it feels terrible. You know, these children is something they should have never gone through, right? Every day putting them on the bus with masks, it's hard, but, you know, it's definitely like we're able to see the light at the end of the tunnel now.
Yeah, they've definitely been resilient, but I think about them often in terms of people that have suffered the most during this pandemic. Shay, thanks for your phone call. We'll leave it there. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a great day, and congratulations.
Thank you, too. Keep up the good work, guys. Great show. Thanks.
Take care. It's Shay calling in. Our question of the day today is, have you booked your kid's vaccine yet? How are you feeling about it? You can text us at 580-580. You could call us at 521-8255 as well, if you wanted to chat as well. A couple of texts talk about my granddaughter. Talk about the vaccines. My granddaughter is in 4-year-old kindergarten. She can't get her shot until the new year because she won't be 5 until next year. My grandson is scheduled for his shot Thursday of next week. So lots of busy parents this morning, up before 8 o'clock. Well, normally are anyway. But this time, getting in to book those appointments. If you've booked an appointment, let us know how you feel about that. You can text us 580-580 or call us here for the next few minutes at 613-521-8255. Now, there have been some concerns for parents, no doubt, in terms of the vaccination, what they've been seeing online, on TV, how they've been seeing things covered. But, you know, most experts are saying there's nothing for parents to fear about this vaccine. Dr. Kathy Keeley is a pediatrician here in Ottawa. I spoke to her over the weekend about any concerns that parents may have and what she would tell them.
Knowledge is power. So I think parents should get all the knowledge that they need about the vaccine. So for me, that means understanding what COVID virus infection can do for children, can do to children, sorry, and to other people, to remember that the side effects, if you like, of not being vaccinated over the long haul, meaning kids not in school, not socializing, all of these things that we've all endured in the last 18 months have really, really impacted kids in a huge way. And it's time now to get our life back to normal. So that's what we want. This vaccine, then, is one of the ways in which we can do that, along with all the other measures that we put in place. And the vaccine has been studied rigorously by Health Canada. And so I feel safe and confident with the knowledge, the scientific knowledge, that it's a safe way forward for our kids. And I think parents need to think about all of that when they try to make an informed decision for their own children. And I, too, hope for the best that the vaccine will have a huge uptake. But parents need to do the due diligence for their own kids.
Dr. Kathy Keeley, Ottawa pediatrician, just speaking with me about what she would tell parents at this point who may have some concerns, you know, not vaccine, you know, not anti-vax or vaccine hesitant, just have some questions. That's what she would say. A few texts here and lots of relief out there this morning. I've been waiting for this day. I work at CHEO and know that this is the best thing for our kids. My 4 kids are booked for Friday morning and I could not be happier. A few tweets here as well. Jerry tweets, yes, and feeling relieved. Kareem texts, yes, feeling hopeful. Isabella tweets, yep, got my 9-year-old booked for next week. We're all feeling a sense of relief. And Denise also tweeting, someone needs to clarify on the 28-day wait in between the flu shot and COVID shot in children. Yes. There have been some clarifications about that with Ottawa Public Health, so check their website as well. Dr. Vera Etchers speaking about that. So what are you feeling this morning? Were you up bright and early, booking your kid for that vaccine appointment? Lots of relief out there from the sounds of callers and texters here and tweeters as well. You can keep texting us and tweeting us. We'll get to those throughout the show today. Once again, text us at 580-580. Tweet us at CFRA Ottawa throughout the rest of the show. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson, in for Leslie Roberts today. Some other good news. It'll be another big help to help Ottawa area kids. Move 100 and CTV's Ottawa, CTV Ottawa's Toy Mountain Toy Drive has begun. It has now launched. On the other side of the break, we'll hear from Angie Poirier from Move 100 to talk about what we need to know to help kids in need this year in the Ottawa area. We'll be right back. This is Ottawa at Work. As I mentioned before the break, Move 100 and CTV Ottawa's Toy Mountain Toy Drive has begun. Joining me to talk about this year's campaign is Move 100 morning show host Angie Poirier. Good morning, Angie.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And thanks so much for joining us. Just, we've been talking about parents' vaccines, or kids' vaccines here for the last little bit. Just, I know you're a parent, just wondering how relieved you're feeling this morning after booking that appointment.
Yeah, so our little guy was the last one in our family to get her done. So we were on very early this morning. I have to say I was anticipating a much longer wait. I was expecting to see that little man walking for a long time on the vaccination site. But booked it right away, was able to get him in. And it's just, yeah, it's a huge relief. There's been, you know, sort of fluctuating cases in his neighborhood around his school, in his school, just a couple, but it's nice to know that he'll be protected moving forward.
Yeah, those protocols of staying at home and all that stuff, you won't have to worry about as much. It's been something we've been hearing about texts and calls this morning, too. But okay, back to the issue at hand here. Mm-hmm. You guys are teaming up with Toy Mountain and Salvation Army. You do this every year, collecting toys. Just how important is this drive to the community in terms of this time of year helping kids in need?
I mean, every year we see the demand increase, but especially this year. I mean, this has been, as we all know, an unprecedented time for everybody. I mean, people are just, you know, really on hard times and just really kind of scraping by. And, you know, they've been telling us that the demand is obviously even greater this year. We're talking about 25,000 kids around Ottawa, 8,000 different family households that will be helped out and will mean, you know, a difference on Christmas morning that, you know, it will be a happy one or a sad one. And we want every kid to be able to open something up on Christmas morning. We all remember that joy. We all felt that joy. And it's just, it's something that everyone should feel. And our community is so incredible every year for helping deliver that to all these families.
Hey, and those numbers might be sobering for some, just in terms of the need in the community. So is there anything that specifically the campaign is looking for this year when it's coming to donations or toys or what have you?
Yeah, I mean, every year, I mean, we say 0 to 12. There's always a little bit of an extra push for the 0 to 2 age group and also the 11 to 12 age group seems to be the ones that people find a little bit more difficult, you know, to buy for just in terms of trying to come up with ideas. But we say, you know, big hits are always going to be like Lego and things like that. But I think the biggest success for you, if you're thinking of donating, is to bring your own kids with you to do that shopping, no matter what age they are. Just, you know, present them the opportunity to go into the aisles and say, if you were shopping for a kid, you know, your age, boy or girl, what would you pick out? Have them pick it out, then have them take that coveted gift and put it in a donation box. And that is, you know, one of the very first instances of charity that you can teach your kids at a very young age, to give it on and pass it forward to someone else. And we see so many families tell us year after year that it's become their family tradition and it's what taught their kids about the meaning of charity.
And we know how empathetic kids can be. So if you put this situation in front of them, like you say, there's no doubt that they'll want to help as well. So how do people donate just in general if they want to donate their toys?
So toymountain.ca is a great resource for all of the drop-off locations. So you can always find the one that's most convenient and closest to you. We have a really great, I mean, we're an at-work workstation for our music. And we know that a lot of workplaces get on board with this. It becomes sort of a team-building thing or even a friendly rivalry thing when you have different departments sort of competing against each other to see who can collect the most toys. But even in these times when maybe you're not working at a typical workplace like you have in the past. Maybe you've been ushered, you're still working from home. We're still encouraging people to, as a group, with that group that you have your weekly Zoom call with, to, you know, do this as a team. Maybe have one or two elves on the team that are responsible with going around and picking up the donations on the doorstep of each one of your members and handling the drop-off. But there's still ways to get it done if we all work together.
That's definitely some great information. And just in terms of, is there a cutoff date, and can people make cash donations as well?
They can. Monetary donations are huge. I think they have a big goal of about $300,000 in monetary donations as the goal to round out all the toys they're going to have to buy to meet the demand this year. So monetary donations can easily be done online. Again, toymountain.ca, just from your home. You don't even have to go out to a store, and, you know, maybe that's not accessible for a lot of people. But on top of that, you know, like all the drop-off locations, what did you just ask me?
Yeah, drop-off location. What did I just ask you? No, is there a cutoff date?
Oh, yeah, the cutoff date. That was the other thing. So December 17th is the cutoff date. Obviously, we want to encourage people, the sooner the better. Mm-hmm. We've had a chance to go into the depots and sort the toys, you know, by age, by gender, by, you know, all of that year after year. We know that that takes a lot of time.
Okay.
So the more time we can give the volunteers, especially in a year like this, the better. So, but again, the final drop-off date would be December 17th. Yeah.
Okay. And Angie, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for your hard work on this and for bringing this campaign to us once again. Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It's Angie Poirier, Move 100, our sister station launching its Toy Mountain campaign along with CTV Ottawa this year. If you wanted to donate, you can head to toymountain.ca for the latest on drop-off information here in Ottawa and around the National Capital Region. We're going to take a quick break for the news here at 10 o'clock. On the other side, the throne speech happening today. Mary Simon delivering that speech from the throne. What will it contain? What are you hoping to hear? Barry McLaughlin will join us from Transform Leaders next after the break. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts. MPs back on Parliament Hill this week for the latest session of Parliament under a third Justin Trudeau mandate, Liberal minority government. Liberal MP Anthony Rota re-elected as Speaker yesterday. Bit of wrangling over vaccines, but now it's on to the business of governing the country, with the throne speech this afternoon. Barry McLaughlin is a senior partner at TransformLeaders.ca and is here to talk about this coming session. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
And not too bad. How about you?
Great.
So we finally get back to Parliament here. I guess we're expecting, you know, much of the Liberal election promises to be repeated this afternoon. But just from your sense, what do you think that the Canadian public is hoping to hear this afternoon?
Well, I think they're in a kind of an upset, unstable state of mind. I mean, they're not entirely sure whether to celebrate that we've got to this phase of COVID or they're worried that it's coming back in. They want to get the economy back to normal. They sort of see good signs of it, but they're not entirely sure. They've had a lot of witness of political wrangling over the election period. I think they're looking for some sense of, are you really getting what we're going through? And are you taking action rather than just playing politics? So I think they're looking for serious of intent, and can you actually work together?
And in terms of delivering that message, I guess, where do you see the Trudeau government being best served as trying to hammer home certain messages, I guess, right now that would resonate with Canadians?
Well, I think they've got to reconnect, I believe, on a caring level. I think that you're going to see, of course, the COVID measures. In particular, I think the one that they're promising of the 10-day sick leave, I think, is a huge step. And it's one that is tangible action, not just caring in words. I think they're also looking for, I think this is a chance, frankly, for any government, this government in particular, to put its values in the storefront window. So the speech from the throne is the one where governments, you know, lay it out there so that they want you to, this is their rebranding, if you want. This is their fresh brand. And I believe that that's what you're going to see here. You know, it is interesting in Ottawa that a lot of lobby groups and national associations and so on, they actually measure their effectiveness by, did you get a line in the speech from the throne? Hey, we got a line in. I remember being in the green room at CTV, and a head of a major national organization, I should go nameless, says to me, we got everything we wanted in the speech from the throne. I'm like, so excited. I'm so excited. And I said, well, you know, maybe you should think of the two words, if then. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, if the government follows through with these words in the speech from the throne, then, you know, it'll be a positive thing. He said, thank you for that. Because, you know, you got to be careful. You don't always see all those promises in the speech from the throne become reality.
And I think the older we get, the more we see that, for sure. You're mentioning this kind of being a rebrand for the Trudeau government. How important do you think that is? If we look back, you know, a few months, Justin Trudeau riding high in the polls, thinking that he's, you know, going to win a majority government, calls an election, that's not the case. So is there a chance here that, you know, Justin Trudeau is on some shaky ground heading into Parliament about his own political future?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it is another minority. It's in one majority followed by two minorities, and he's got one more crack at trying to turn his government into a majority. So I think that lessons no doubt would be learned from the last go-round, and he's got to show that he is the person that's best connected to the core values of Canadians. He has got to show that serious purpose. I do believe that this is a chance for him. But, you know, in a minority environment, it is unstable by definition, so he can't guarantee, for example, I mean, Mr. Singh may not support him on certain aspects. You know, if he starts to cut certain COVID benefits, Mr. Singh said there right there yesterday, I may not be supporting him. Whoops, he's got to scramble and get it elsewhere. So there is still that uncertainty in the environment.
And that's it. Instability and uncertainty sometimes does create some opportunities for opposition parties as well. I know Conservative leader Erin O'Toole has been busy with some party infighting recently, but it looks like we're ready to move ahead. I guess, do you see any opportunities for the Conservatives to attack the Trudeau Liberals here effectively and try to regain some support that they did see during the election campaign?
Yeah, that's another good question. Yeah, I think that you saw the signal yesterday that Mr. O'Toole sent out a public letter to the Prime Minister, congratulating him first of all for his work on the response to the floods in BC, and saying that all parties need to come together to unite. And I thought that was a signal that politics as usual is not what people want. And I think that if he can follow that through, of course, their role is to hold the government's feet to the fire. That's what opposition members do. That's what the opposition parties do. And I think they're going to hone in on the issues of inflation, the issues of housing, the issues of affordability. These are issues that are naturally conservative issues. And I believe that's where they're going to keep their focus.
And when it comes to the NDP and Jagmeet Singh, as you mentioned, you know, I think the Liberals are counting on much support from the NDP to keep their agenda going as well. So a little bit of leverage for Jagmeet Singh and the NDP. Do you see them holding that balance of power during the course of this session once again?
Well, again, you know, it's such a strong minority that Mr. Trudeau is in a lucky position, doesn't entirely depend on them 100% of the time. But I think that you're seeing already Mr. Singh taking credit for the sick leave and aspects. He's going to be pushing for pharmacare. There's a number of things that he wants to be, quote, the true conscience of the government. And this is what his natural positioning is. He's going to push hard on those issues. He's not going to brook much taking away benefits. So there's a little battle on the left side of the spectrum as well.
A little further left in the spectrum as well. Do you say one last one? The Green Party, of course, having a tumultuous time during the last election campaign. Anna May Paul officially resigning, I think that was last weekend. Do you think that the Green Party during this session of Parliament makes any attempts to try to, I guess, pick up the pieces?
Sadly, no. Certainly not in Parliament. I think they're going to have to go away through their own convention and conference and everything else and try to sort out what their issues are, sort out, get a new leader, try to rebrand and reframe what they're, you know, where they are on the political spectrum. They have a lot of work to do, but it really won't be done in Parliament.
Yeah, with only, I think it's one seat.
Yeah. Unless when they tried to become Speaker, it would have been the best exit strategy of all. Yeah. Didn't quite work out.
Well, we'll leave it there for now. Barry, thanks so much for your time today. As always, I super appreciate it.
My pleasure, Andrew.
It's Barry McLaughlin with TransformLeaders.ca, setting us up for the coming session of Parliament and this afternoon's throne speech. Of course, Governor General Mary Simon's first throne speech as Governor General. It is expected to recap the campaign promises that the Trudeau Liberals were making out back in late fall or late summer, early fall. But second minority government, third mandate overall. What are you hoping to hear in this afternoon's throne speech? You can text us, 580-580. You can also tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. We'll get to your responses throughout the show. We've also been asking in general this morning, if you're a parent, are you feeling relieved? Have you booked that COVID-19 vaccine for your kid this morning? Appointments opening before 8. They were expected to open at 8. But lots of happy parents, lots of relieved parents on our Twitter page. and in our text box this morning. How are you feeling about that? You can text us at 580-580. You can also tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. Still to come on the show today, the police budget back before Ottawa City Council today, or back at Ottawa City Hall, being debated at committee this afternoon, taking a bit of a break yesterday. Some contentious issues at play here. $14 million the police force is asking for in terms of an increase to its budget. But some not happy with that. The Ottawa Black Diaspora Coalition blocking the 417 last night in opposition of this funding increase. They're looking for a funding freeze, as they're still looking for ways for the police service to work with minority communities in the Ottawa area. So we'll be chatting about that. Vanessa Dormain is one of the organizers with the Black Diaspora Coalition. She's going to join us later this hour to talk about last night's protest, what they would like to see from the Ottawa Police Service coming up in the future. Also going to check in with Shannon Proudfoot, the Ottawa Bureau Chief at McLean's. Parents have been dealing with these unique challenges over the course of the pandemic. Shannon has been writing about this very recently in McLean's magazine, but also feeling a sense of relief today. So she's going to join us just after 11 o'clock. All of that and more coming up here on Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson, in for Leslie Roberts. With you until noon today. We'll be right back.
This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA. Agree or disagree, we want to hear from you. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
1022, this is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson, in for Leslie Roberts this morning. It is the big day for parents. Have you booked your kids' COVID-19 vaccine yet today? How are you feeling? Lots of messages of relief and just pure joy from parents this morning. A couple of phone calls earlier as well. Text from Richard says, kind of indifferent to book the appointment for our 10-year-old son. We'll decide on going through with it after reading the NACI report. One sticking point, the report stating that the trial size wasn't large enough to properly analyze the possibility of myocarditis in this age group. That's from Richard. And it is a fair point. I asked a pediatrician about this on the weekend. And they say that your risk from myocarditis is still much higher from COVID than it is from the vaccine. So it's we still don't know about the long-term effects of the COVID virus. We've seen COVID long haulers and some of the symptoms that they have. So, you know, they're saying the risk is much higher with COVID. So that is a fair point. And I did talk to Dr. Kathy Keeley over the weekend, an Ottawa pediatrician, just about some concerns from parents. And she says knowledge is power. So be listening to your public health officials. Dr. Vera Etches, you know, we hear from her quite often on this. Just find a reputable source. Ottawa Public Health is a good place for those resources as well. But let us know how you're feeling about booking that kid's vaccine today. You can text us at 580-580. You can also tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. And just coming in right now, just speaking of COVID, some new case numbers coming in. 613 new cases across the province today. So seeing that little bit of a bump continue, but epidemiologists saying as long as we can keep the healthcare system kind of intact, that we should be able to deal with this spike in the fourth wave. And then we're actually doing much better than expected still here in the fourth wave. So trying to stay optimistic moving forward. One day, I swear, we're going to stop talking about COVID. It won't be the main topic every day. Hopefully, one day, soon. Dr. Gregor Rose is an infectious disease specialist here in Ottawa. He's predicting by the spring we should kind of have a better sense of where we are in terms of ending the pandemic, ending those measures that we have in place. So we just got to get through the winter. It's just a typical Ottawa winter, right? Still coming up on the show today, we are going to chat with Shannon Proudfoot at McLean's about the relief of parents, but also the challenges that they have been facing. How big of a game changer is the vaccine for parents when it comes to getting your kids to school and activities? And as we heard from Shay, who called in earlier, you know, they've got a grandparent that's immunocompromised. So this obviously has been playing into people's thoughts and decisions and plans in life. Hmm. Just a text here on the police budget as well, which we'll be chatting more in later on this hour. Jeff in Ottawa texts, you're actually giving airtime to 20 people that showed up to complain for a couple hours. Wow, slow news day. Did you see their list of 10 contradictory demands? One, freeze budget. Two, spend more money on other things even though you froze the budget. I'd rather listen to a test pattern than your interview of someone so irrelevant. There are truly actual issues in Ottawa that matter for you to cover. Thank you. I appreciate the text, Jeff. I think that the plight of racialized communities in Ottawa and their relationship with the police is most certainly newsworthy, particularly as we debate a police budget that is worth millions and millions of dollars of taxpayers' money. And yes, they would like to see the money used in other ways. We're going to chat with them about that. It's part of the problem in the kind of state that we live in right now is we have so many people willing to just dismiss everything that anybody has to say without even listening to it, without even hearing it, and just putting their own thoughts and spins on everything and moving on. We listen. I don't know. That's how we move forward. We can debate. We can have, I don't know, polite discourse. But just, I don't know, dismissing people outright because you don't think it's an issue, I don't think serves anybody. We're going to take a break here for the news. On the other side, we're going to chat with the Ottawa Firefighters Association. The union representing firefighters also dealing with some budget crisis as well. They're concerned about staffing, just more budget issues at City Hall. But we'll chat about that coming up after the break. Also continuing our chat, the Ottawa Black Diaspora Coalition, as I mentioned, will join us later on this hour as well to chat about last night's protest and the police budget. All of that and more coming up. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts with you until noon today. Yeah, I do the same thing. I told you that I never would. I told you I'd change even when I knew I never could. Know that I can't find nobody else as good as you. I need you to stay.
You're listening to Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA.
10:34, this is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts today. It is budget season at City Hall. Much of the focus this week has been on the $14 million increase being asked for by the police department. But Ottawa firefighters are also looking for extra funding as well. The Firefighters Association says there's a huge shortage in staff. It's led to mandatory overtime, even some firefighters being called in from vacation. Doug McLennan is the president of the Ottawa Professional Firefighters Association and joins us this morning to talk about this. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Andy. Thank you for having me this morning.
And thanks so much for joining us. So like I mentioned, we have been talking a lot about the police budget, but firefighter budget, obviously very important to this city as well. So what has the plight of the Ottawa firefighter been for the last year as, you know, COVID-19 has also been a problem?
Well, you can imagine we're working every day protecting the citizens of the city and dealing with the pandemic every day and handling it very well for the past year and a half, adapting and overcoming at every end. But at this certain juncture where we're at now is we're into the an aspect I've never seen in my 19 years here with the fire services, that we're calling people to work overtime, and members are just saying they're burnt out, they can't fill the seats because they're getting so much overtime, and it's an anomaly I've seen it progress. But I've never seen it before. When we looked 2018 and beyond, we never seen anything in the past like this. And now we're starting to see it become more prevalent. And there was a time period where the fire chief at the time, who's now the general manager, Kim Ayotte, had spoken on that they wouldn't be running a hiring model. They would be running an overtime model. Mm-hmm. And that was before the pandemic. And now we can see that where we sit, we are actually in a point where we have less staff and we're running so much overtime that the staff that wants to work can only work so much. And, you know, and I mean, that's myself. I look at it from my standpoint is that I'm turning down overtime left, right, and center this year alone, because I not only do I run as a work on the truck as an acting lieutenant, but I'm also running the association. So, I mean, it's a tough position for all our members to be put in, which has a real easy solution, and that's to start hiring, not just to replace the retirements, but to start staffing, upstaffing to where we were in 2011.
And where do you think, first of all, I guess, what do you make of that kind of unprecedented kind of staffing issue right now? Do you credit it to COVID? Are there other issues, retirements? I guess, what are you seeing in terms of that staffing issue?
I just see it more of as a risk management model by the employer, the City of Ottawa, the fire services, just to kind of run status quo, because it is, in effect, working in some ways on a risk management model. But when you get into these areas right now where we're sitting, where we have every day six apparatus out of service serving some strategic areas in the City of Ottawa, and then we look at it and say, how do we fill those trucks? We can't even fill those trucks because we don't have enough employees. And then on top of that, with moving everything through the pandemic, members have moved their holidays around and fluctuated so much with their lives to meet what we're doing for the fire services under the pandemic to make things work. And you get to this point in juncture where you're later in the year, this typically would not be an overtime season, other than the odd hunters that we would have in our fire services. You wouldn't see a lot of members on overtime, but now we're still driving that overtime model and we're into December almost. So it's very concerning to the association, because for the longest time, I've always watched how the trucks have not been filled with extra staff, and we're never advocating, and you don't see it in the budget with the Community Protective Services to advocate for more full-time employees. And that would be the FTE language that you see that comes to budget each time. Meanwhile, we see it every time from the paramedics and every time from the police. So at this juncture, I looked at what's going on with my membership and said that this has just got to stop. We have to start hiring. And at some point, it has to be the focal point of what we want to do. And I really think it's going to become, I don't know if it's going to go away or it's going to continue on. Nobody has a crystal ball to see that. I just seen that it's getting worse through 2018 to now.
And it's obviously an important service, and we don't want burnt out firefighters on the front lines. I think we can all agree about that. We care about, those who are trying to protect us. But, would you see it as more cost efficient in that sense, as, hiring a few more firefighters than paying all of this overtime that we've seen so far this year?
I would think so. I think if I'm just one firefighter amongst, 850 or so other firefighters, I don't look at, when I say firefighters, I mean those that are on the frontline apparatus that are going to all the calls. We still have other support divisions and other areas that we incorporate. But specifically for the fire model, when we're looking at the suppression end of it, I think that we need to start hiring, because you can only work so much overtime. And the members are starting to feel that pinch on themselves. And while I love to have as much overtime, I've turned down 40 plus overtime shifts this year, and I'm just one out of 850. So I don't know if they're filling on some days. There's 30 plus firefighters coming in to work and fill those seats on the trucks due to the exchange of holidays and everything that's going on to meet the pandemic needs. But I think that at some juncture, you need to look at it and say, we need to hire more staff so we're not spending so much on the overtime.
And when you, if you were to get the go ahead from the city and say, okay, hire some more firefighters, do you, because we haven't been hiring in a very long time, do you think that there is the labor market is big enough to attract more firefighters here to the Ottawa region, or would that be an issue as well?
I think that we always have a good turnout of a hiring process. And when I say we, it's the fire services. The association doesn't really have a say in the handling of how fire services hires from the public, I guess. I know that they are going to a new hiring process in the future, which will start the new process. And that will require people from the public to spend upwards to $10,000 to $15,000 to get some of the certifications they need to enable to just apply to the fire service. So I don't know how that picture is going to be painted in the future. I did raise it to the CPS committee when I originally spoke to them, I believe a couple months ago. And I did draw light to the fact that this would not be very inclusive or create diversity for our city. It would also take it away from the generalities of the public being able to apply just on the surface. Because now you're creating an exclusive group that would have to hire or be applying with $10,000 or $15,000 in their pocket to go and apply and get the requirements they need. So I don't know what that hiring looks like, but I mean, at this juncture, it's time to have those discussions at a high level and not have thoughtful considerations. Thoughtful considerations, I always equate that to, did I have a thoughtful consideration this morning to put cream in my coffee or milk in my coffee? And that's my thoughtful consideration for the morning. I am not going to put public safety as a thoughtful consideration. It should be at the utmost and at the forefront. So staffing is something we need. We need to make those models work across the city. We have multiple stations that have trucks out of service every morning throughout not just the pandemic, but prior to this. And I think we need to start looking at how can we get those staffed. When I was hired back in 2003, every vehicle was in service in the city of Ottawa, every vehicle. And now we sit here every day with six apparatus out of service, and we've teetered on taking a few more apparatus out of service due to staffing requirements and falling below the minimum staff that we have an agreement on. But even at the surface, that agreement doesn't match up to what I personally believe is puts us in a little bit of a safety position as a firefighters throughout the city of Ottawa.
Well, and do you have any concerns about that? Just with the, you know, in totality, the issues we've been talking about with, you know, burnout and overtime. Do you have any concerns that this could affect frontline service in some kind of way, shape, or form?
Honestly, I can't really give you the clearest answer on that one. I know our members are resilient and will more than likely answer the phone calls. I always feel it's a heavy burden on some of those members in our association when they have to make 800 phone calls in the morning or in the afternoon to try and fill 30 positions that are vacant for the day because of vacation, lieu day schedules, sicknesses, WSIB, et cetera, right? So, I mean, I just don't know. I don't know what the crystal ball would say for that one item. I think that we've been very fortunate that our members are working their tails off to fill the seats and come in and work the overtime. But at what end do you keep doing that model before you say, I have to start hiring as a manager? I mean, I look at the fact that the fire services has provided no strategic plan for 2021 to 2024, but they're managing $178 million approximate budget. I look at it from my standpoint. I run a household budget, and I make a strategic plan for what I want to do next year. So I don't know why this would not come to the forefront and why CPS, the Community Protective Services Committee, isn't really looking at that as a huge issue. And I mean, that's really where it has to go. You can't just plan $178 million and wing it. It has to be in the forefront, and thoughtful considerations, while they're nice, they don't provide the extra seats. They don't provide those six apparatus that are out of service with dedicated staff every day.
And we'll have to leave it there for now. But Doug McClanney, the president of the Ottawa Professional Firefighters Association, thanks so much for your time today. I very much appreciate it.
No problem. I'm always available to chat anytime you want to talk about firefighting issues.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
Take care.
We've been chatting about the police budget, but the firefighters' budget also an issue for the union at City Hall. President of the Ottawa Professional Firefighters Association saying that many burnt-out firefighters across the capital have been dealing with overtime, a ton of overtime. They need more staff. So budget time at City Hall tends to be a very busy time before Christmas here. But what do you think? You can text us 580-580, tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. We'll also chat about the police budget coming up later this hour as well. Also, we've been chatting about kids' vaccines for COVID-19. How relieved are you as a parent to get that booking today? Have you booked yet? Let us know. Text us 580-580, tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. Shannon Proudfoot is the Ottawa Bureau Chief for McLean's. She's been writing about the challenges that parents have been facing over the course of this pandemic and what the vaccine means for them. We'll chat with her coming up after 11 o'clock. And when is real snow coming? David Phillips at Environment Canada is going to join us next hour to let us know when we can expect the white stuff here in the capital for good. I think we're doing well. It's November 23rd. Look outside right now. I don't know. It's been worse in years past, I think. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back here on Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson, in for Leslie Roberts. Take my breath.
You're listening to Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA.
This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts. As we've been chatting about, the budget process underway at City Hall, the Ottawa Police Force asking for a $14 million funding increase from last year. That's being debated once again at City Hall today for a second straight day. But it's not sitting well with some in the community, including a group that blocked access to the 417 last night to protest the funding across and call for a freeze. Layla is with the Ottawa Black Diaspora Coalition and joins us this morning. Good morning, Layla.
Good morning.
And thanks so much for joining us. So just first, let's chat about last night's protest first. Why did you think that getting the message out on the 417 on-ramp was the best message, best way to get that message out to the public last night?
I think it was not so much about the location, but Ottawa has proven to be a pretty apathetic city over the last few years. And OBDC has been running now for 6 years, and we have followed the parameters of what's comfortable for Ottawa for a majority of those 6 years. But with growing urgency and importance in the messages that Black folks are trying to get across about what they're facing at the hands of the police and what they're facing at the hands of the police, who's taking money out of social services that are very necessary to many communities in Ottawa, we felt it necessary to kind of ramp up our efforts and be somewhere that couldn't be ignored so easily as we've been before.
So just as a way to get the message out to more broadly to the public. So the funding freeze that the group is asking for, that is in stark contrast to the $14 million that the police service is asking for. So do you see any risks that, I guess, reducing that police budget this year will actually have some not so great outcomes for the coming year?
You're asking if reducing the budget would be would have bad outcomes?
Yeah, if we went ahead with the freeze as the group is asking for here and froze the budget for 2022, do you anticipate that having less funding will mean some problems in Ottawa and for the police as well?
No, I think that having less funding, the only place where I see having less funding having negative effects for communities in Ottawa is in the fact that police is still prioritized when it comes to a lot of the ways in which social services should be able to have their space and have their funding and be supported in their work. For example, with mental health response, police should have no business being involved in mental health response, and we've seen the results of that. And so for us, the goal is to defund the police and see social services be funded and supported enough to be able to take up the spaces and create opportunities for lowering criminalization. Criminalization is something that we've only seen the police perpetuate and enhance. And so for us, the goal is eventually to not have any police. We don't see the work that is being done that is beneficial to our community. Statistically, it has shown that the police is not a helpful body. And so we are not concerned at all with what it would look like if the police budget was frozen, decreased, et cetera.
And just on that point, I know the OPP had done a pilot project with a mental health nurse out, I think it was Lanark County, responding to calls. But unfortunately, that pilot ended. And there were talk about how it was actually incredibly helpful for the police force in general and the community in terms of getting people away from the emergency room and giving police time to do things that, you know, they can actually help with in terms of the immediate public safety aspect and not deal with these mental health calls. Do you see a value for a service like that? And two, just in some of these situations, you know, where we think that, you know, weapons are involved or there is a threat to the public, do you see a value, I guess, for having police in those types of situations?
I think that history and examples all across the world have shown that the people who are most able to keep a community safe are the people in the community. And so and our organization are very hopeful that at some point those things are going to be able to be seen in Ottawa in larger formats. When it comes to the lack of cultural competency, when it comes to the lack of anti-oppression knowledge, and when it comes to just the fact that the police is and has always been in contradiction to our communities, I outside of every example that has consistently been shown, just know that it is important for communities to be able to be resourced, even individuals within communities to be able to be resourced, to be able to keep themselves safe. So I don't think that I see a lot of youth in the police in themselves running programs that have to do with responding to mental health. That isn't the goal, because I think for us, it's really important to understand we are asking for a police budget freeze this year, but the eventual goal is for the city of Ottawa to no longer have to deal with police, to no longer have to have Black families' homes being invaded in the middle of the night with people, the police pointing guns in their children's faces. We don't want to see weapons used in this way. We don't want to see policing done in this way. And we don't think that this is an effective way to keep our community safe.
And just lastly for you while I have you, just, you know, I read a story yesterday online shared by a man named Khaled. Talked about how he was recently pulled over a couple of days ago for, he was driving a rental car. Of course, Khaled is a Black man. He was driving a rental car. The police officer told him that, you know, some people like to commit crimes in rental cars. And he kind of went on about his day after that, and they had some jokes about it or whatever. But clearly, you know, it's not really a great reason to pull somebody over. So this is something that does happen to people within the Ottawa area and beyond in Canada. So I just want to get the message out that it's important to realize that in 2021, these are some of the issues that we're still kind of dealing with in society.
Exactly. And I think that that's something that we have a really hard time with in Ottawa, is because unlike the States and unlike even places like Toronto, we don't hear about the stories of Black folks and what they're living at the hands of police or what they're living at the hands of an anti-Black system. And so it is important for people to remember that in 2021, a Black man can still be pulled over for being a Black man, and then hearing jokes like that don't even, they're not appropriate and they shouldn't be able to be said. And so I think our big message is really wanting to continue to amplify the fact that Black folks are in this city and Black folks are facing the immediate results of police violence in silence. And it doesn't mean that it's not there because we're not hearing it. And so we have to keep doing this work, and we need to see Ottawa show up and support these causes, because we're going to keep seeing this. 2022 is coming up, and this is still an issue. And that, as an organization that started in 2016, is really hard to grapple with.
And we'll just have to leave it there because of time. But Layla, thanks so much for your time this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Layla is with the Ottawa Black Diaspora Coalition talking about the police services budget, where their group stands on this issue. Just a quick text here says, I'm all for hearing both sides of the conversation, but as soon as they said to get rid of the police entirely, the interview should have ended. This is the issue, right? You don't have to agree with everything. As soon as somebody says something you don't agree with, do you stop talking to them? Do you run away in a personal conversation? What is wrong with people? Just because you don't agree with something, you know, you can also have your own opinion, right? You don't have to just shut everybody out. I don't understand that. Anyway, lots of opinions on this. Text us 580-580. Tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. We're going to take a quick break, a little more optimistically when we come back, chatting about kids' vaccines opening for bookings today. Big news for parents, big relief for parents. We'll hear about that with Shannon Proudfoot from McLean's Ottawa Bureau Chief coming up after the break. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson, in for Leslie Roberts.
This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
11:09, this is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson, in for Leslie Roberts. Beautiful sunshine in the Byward Market today. Just following up on our last conversation quickly here, just about the police services budget. We'll get to all your texts at the bottom of the hour at 11:30. Also talk about that protest last night by the Ottawa Black Diaspora Coalition. And we were talking about hearing both sides of the conversation before the break. And someone texted, the same goes for vaccinated, Andrew. You can't have it both ways. Difference of opinion. Right. There is no debate over vaccines. That's over now. That's not a debate. It's not like believing in the tooth fairy or what have you. Sorry for any kids listening. But vaccines work. That's it. Anyway, we've been continuing to chat about relief of parents today, being able to book a COVID-19 vaccine for their child as of 8 o'clock this morning. Some, in fact, even earlier. One of those relief parents is McLean's Magazine Ottawa Bureau Chief Shannon Proudfoot. She joins us on the line to chat about this. Good morning, Shannon.
Hi there.
You must have been one of the most excited people in Ottawa when this happened. I say that because I was reading extensively about some of the challenges that parents have faced during this pandemic that you wrote about recently. And I can't imagine the feeling that you must be feeling right now among with other parents.
Well, I'm certainly relieved and excited. I managed to book one of my kids for early next week. I'm not in quite as lucky a basket because only one of my three kids qualifies so far is eligible. But gotcha. For sure, it's a big moment. But to the point of the column I wrote a week or two ago, it's been really, really brutal on parents of young kids to a degree and in a way that I actually don't think people fully understand if they're not in that basket, just because of the grind of the routine of symptoms and testing and isolation. I sort of think in a lot of ways we've kind of not completely moved on. We're not completely back to normal, but you could go to a restaurant, you could go to a hockey game. A lot of people's lives are normal. Those things are available to them. And for parents of young kids, things are still not even remotely close to normal. If any of your kids have symptoms or don't feel well, everyone has to stay home. You have to get them a testing appointment. Your workday is upside down. And it's just really grinding people down in a way that I felt was becoming a bit invisible, which was sort of why I wanted to highlight it.
Yeah, and, you know, even for some who don't have the option to work from home, that becomes even more of a huge barrier. And particularly moms over the course of this pandemic have been hit particularly hard. And people may not understand, like you say, what this means. It's kind of why I've been chatting about how this seems like a big day today. But where do you see this going from here, just in terms of, do you think this will be, I guess, the final nail for parents, just in terms of being able to kind of get back to a sense of normalcy?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of strands to it. It depends on how this drives down cases and community transmission. You know, as I alluded to, not all kids are eligible yet. Any kid under five is not. So not everyone can be covered yet. But assuming that this provides greater community coverage of vaccination and drives down rates, that helps. Once, you know, on a selfish individualized level, once your kids are fully vaccinated, which again, I would point out for anyone whose kids qualify as of this week, will not be for a minimum 2 months and 2 weeks because they have to wait 8 weeks for their second dose and then 2 months after, 2 weeks after that. But once your kids are fully vaccinated, if you have one kid who comes down with symptoms, you would no longer have to keep the vaccinated kids at home, which certainly helps. But one of the big things and a huge contributor to, I think, the poor quality of life, I would say, of parents with young kids has been the wait time for testing. Mm-hmm. I mean, now I think it's fairly quick. You can get a take-home test kit from most schools or from, you know, the main Brewer testing site in Ottawa, but you're still waiting 24 hours to have that test processed. And so you sort of think you wake up in the morning or you get a call from the school, a kid goes home sick, you're looking at probably 2 days out where you have at least one, maybe all of your kids at home with you, can't work, as you alluded to. Some people don't work from home, and I literally have no idea how those people are handling it. So, you know, we'll have to see how the rising vaccination rates help in general, but we also need really quick, reliable access to testing to turn these things around.
Yeah, similarly for us last January, it was 3 days and then you get the negative test and it just, I don't know, it takes so long. But just in terms of moving forward here, we've seen what parents have kind of had to face during this pandemic. And like I mentioned, you know, particularly mothers. I know you wrote another column last week, I think it was, talking about, you know, childcare not being a boutique tax item. Is this something we need to kind of address moving forward? Is this idea that, you know, one, that parenting isn't exactly, you know, just an easy kind of route to take or an easy thing, and also that moms in particular shouldn't have to bear the most of the responsibility?
Yeah, so the piece I wrote last week was about how childcare, I would really like us to stop talking about like a boutique women's issue. Like we still have, even in these progressive, well-meaning conversations that are talking about the importance of childcare as essential social infrastructure, which clearly it is. It's still often we talk about it as like a thing for moms, which is ridiculous. Like it is important to all working parents. You could already make an argument that it's important to everyone, to the functioning of society and the raising of successful, thriving kids. But even if you want to be more narrow about it, I just would like the rhetoric to stop being that this is about moms, that this is like a treat, because otherwise they'll have to stay home. I think it's important, you know, as you've been alluding to acknowledge the often social reality that women are more likely, for a variety of reasons, to take the hit on their work day or on their career for the needs of kids. But that's something we need to fix and equalize, not something we want to entrench. So I don't want us to keep talking about daycare as a woman's issue, because it's not. You know, in my family and generally in society, it's, you know, you kind of do that scramble every day. If a kid is sick, you kind of think, oh God, okay, whose schedule can sustain this today? How are we going to juggle this? And I just think it would go a long way to talking about it as a working parent's issue and even as a societal investment.
Yeah, and we've seen it through the course of this pandemic, how valuable that child care is. But we'll leave it there for now, Shannon. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it and hope you can sleep well tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Take care. That's Shannon Proudfoot, Ottawa Bureau Chief at McLean's, chatting about kids' vaccines being open today, the relief of parents, the challenges that they've faced as well over the course of this pandemic. Have you booked your kid in for a vaccine yet? How are you feeling about it? Text us 580-580. Tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. We'll be getting to your text at the bottom of the hour as well. Continuing our conversation about the police services budget as well. Lots of texts on that for our conversation. So we'll get to those at the bottom of the hour as well. Still to come, also going to check in with David Phillips at Environment Canada after this next break to talk about when the real snow is coming. And it is flurries. When can we expect the real stuff? He's going to let us know also about the ongoing situation in BC as well, just dealing with more weather devastation there on the West Coast as well, as they continue to need our help. We were chatting about Toy Mountain this morning. If you wanted to make a donation, you can go to toymountain.ca. But also, if you're looking to donate to the relief fund in BC, you can go to the BC Red Cross. You're also being asked to donate to BC Food Banks as well, if you're looking to give back or to help out with the situation out in BC. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll chat more about the weather here in Ottawa, as well as the climate out in BC coming up after the break. I'm Andrew Pinson. This is Ottawa at Work.
You're listening to News Talk 580 CFRA, Ottawa's home for break on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
11:22, this is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts. Beautiful sunshine in the Byward Market, but we know the white stuff is coming soon. Some hints of flurries expected later on this week, but when can we get the real snow here in Ottawa? David Phillips is senior climatologist with Environment Canada and joins us this morning. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm all right. I appreciate the call and having a chance to talk to you during the weekday and instead of the weekend. But anyway, yeah. Whenever it is, it's a good time.
Well, we appreciate your time, and we're hoping that you have some good news for us, David, just in terms of when can we expect the normal helpings of snow that we normally get here in the Ottawa area this year?
Well, Andrew, I don't know if it's good news or bad news. I don't, you know, I mean, some people love the snow. People hate the snow. I know what people in Ottawa are more, I mean, you are the snowiest national capital in the world. I mean, so you know what's coming. I've really wondered where is the snow? I mean, you've had, I think, in total about, well, less than 2 centimeters of snow. I think we'll get through November without seeing any dump of snow. I just see the F word in the forecast, flurries, flurries, and flurries. I mean, there's none of this white Christmas stuff that you're going to see before December 1st. And so, I mean, I wouldn't even start greasing up the snowmobile or getting the skis ready. I mean, it's just not coming. We typically would have had maybe 25 centimeters of snow by this time, but it has been just either it's been rain, no snow events, or it's just been too warm to have the white stuff. So I think there are some people in Ottawa, maybe they're the silent majority, who are saying, hey, I don't mind it. I don't have to shovel, plow it, push it, or commuting's not an issue for me. But clearly, Andrew, it is just the conditions are not ripe for snow in the Ottawa area. I mean, even what we're seeing today in my home, I live in Barrie, north of Toronto, and we had a snow yesterday from Lake Effect and good amounts in some parts of Lake Effect country. But, hey, Ottawa's removed from the lakes, and often these storms that come up the Atlantic coast, they come over and hit you, and you get some snow that way. But certainly nothing so far.
Well, and it has felt at least a little bit unseasonably warm here in the Ottawa area as well. I guess how typical is it for us to get through an entire November and not have snow?
Well, it's I don't think it's ever happened. I mean, I think in fact, I think it's barely do you ever get out of October without seeing some of the white stuff. Now, it's typically, it comes and goes, so it's not something that's a permanent snow cover where you look out your window and it looks like January. I mean, and there have been some powerful events in the past with some heavy amounts of rain. But, hey, take today. I mean, today, really, with a high of -5, which is about 7 degrees cooler than it should be this afternoon, and this morning, the low got down to, I think, -7, -7.5. Well, this is the coldest day of the winter. So at least we've seen a change today. And you've only had, I would say, one what we call all freeze day. That would be the day where the temperature didn't get above the melting point. You normally would have had about 5 or 6 of those by now. And even frost days, where some day time during the day you got frost, well, you've had 30 of those. We've had 15 of them so far. So it's really been slow coming. And even after today, I mean, look at those temperatures tomorrow and Thursday, 4 degrees. That's a couple degrees warmer than normal. Now they begin to fall after that. But it's not a rush to winter after that. So, you know, I don't see anything on the forecast. And you know, forecasts are fairly good for 7 days out, but nothing that will leave you in any snow. In fact, at the beginning of December, it looks like a little bit more warm weather. So my sense is you're going to have to be more patient if you want the white stuff.
Yeah, we'll have to sit and wait. Just while I have you for a couple more minutes, too, Dave, just wanted to ask you about what's happening in BC. We're seeing a parade of storms expected out in BC as they've been dealing with some incredible amounts of devastating weather. Floods, mudslides, and what have you. What exactly is happening here in terms of a weathered system that's continually hammering the West Coast here?
You know, Andrew, there's the first law of meteorology is persistence. What you see is what you're going to get. For some reason, when the atmosphere sets up and it seems to get a pattern of this, either long bouts of good weather or long bouts of miserable weather, just storm after storm. You're right, a parade, like jumbo jets on the airport tarmac, one after the other, and then sometimes they're perfectly timed, you know, every 2 or 3 days. This has been referred to as an atmospheric river. It sounds like it's a new thing. It hasn't. It's been around for decades, and it's just that it sort of caught on, along with weather bombs and heat domes and all of these things. And we used to call it, I remember years ago, referring to a pineapple express or a tropical punch. These are air streams or plumes that come from the tropics. They have lots of moisture associated with them, Andrew. They have usually some powerful winds. And they are like taking a fire hose and just sticking it right at the lower mainland. I think what's different this year is that they all seem to be hitting about the same area. They can go up and down the coast, and typically this one that was a week ago, it really is like it's sort of like a Cat 5 hurricane. I mean, it is powerful, intense, and also, Andrew, what surprised me, it was long-lasting. Instead of just 20 hours, which is what the normal lifespan of these atmospheric rivers when they hit, this went on 3 days. And the other thing, Andrew, it just didn't hit the coast. It was almost taking a boat ride down the Fraser, well deep into the Fraser Canyon. And to have that kind of a tropical system get that far in, and of course, when it hits the coast, the mountains, it yields the precipitation. And so it is really just been. And of course, this is the fourth atmospheric river in 4 weeks, and we're going to get more. We see one on Thursday, another one Saturday. Not as intense, not as long lasting, but hitting the same area. So it's just misery on top of misery. And you're right. You got a feel for the people there. We're setting all kinds of records in terms of the wettest fall on record. And just powerful storms, strong winds, and you're just seeing water flowing where it's never flowed before, and parts of mountains breaking off. I mean, it is really a head shaker, even for me, been in the business a half century, and I just can't believe the power. It's sort of like a hurricane without, but with fronts to it. It feels like that, And boy, it is doing a number on that part of Canada.
Yeah, devastating. And thinking of our brothers and sisters in BC. But David, thanks so much for your time this morning. I very much appreciate it.
Okay, Andrew, nice to be with you again. Bye-bye.
You as well. That's David Phillips, senior climatologist with Environment Canada, joining us to chat about winter here in Ottawa when we could see it. Sounds like no snow, at least through the first week of December so far. Of course, that can change very quickly. And also the devastation in BC that continues. We're going to take a quick break. Going to get to some of your text messages and tweets coming up after this break. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Leslie Roberts. Code words. Now, you are, this is just in response to our conversation. Let's see here. You're just an extremist on the left pushing an agenda, of course. There are thousands more protesting vaccines and you're not giving them a voice. It's because you disagree with them. But it's not because you're nobly speaking out for the minority. It's all about extreme left-wing agendas that you agree with and want to push. You ignore even louder voices as out of hand. A police budget freeze is beyond ridiculous. The price of gas alone is at an all-time high, which by itself means a budget freeze leaves them with less money than they did last year. That text from Jeff. And thank you, Jeff. Yeah, I don't know. How does calling anybody an extremist for having a different view as you, right? Like, what is an extremist? Yeah, they have some views that are patently different than yours. But like, an extremist? Like, really? Let's just like tone down the rhetoric here. I don't think anybody has an extremist left-wing agenda. They're just chatting about stuff that's happening in the city, right? There was a protest that happened last night. Group that blocked it. We talked to them. That was it. Another text. I listened to the whole conversation, but people like that do not deserve a platform. They brought absolutely no valid points about eliminating the police force. Everything they brought up involved criminal activity. Yes, there's bias to the police force that needs to be eliminated, but they didn't bring any of that up. Did all of that to try and help them so they don't seem like the extremists that they are. Again, just this word extremist, I don't understand. You don't have to agree with them, right? You don't have to agree with these people. You also don't have to attack them and what they're, you know, personally as well, right? I think we can all agree that the experience for a black person in Ottawa is much different than the experience for a white person in Ottawa, and that the interactions with police are much different, right? And it just, think of it this way even. Look at this Kyle Rittenhouse verdict that's happening south of the border, right? Let's go back in time a little bit. Do you remember the O.J. Simpson trial? I think most of you do. But O.J. Simpson was found not guilty. Insanely, we could obviously say now, with all the evidence that was against him. Do you know why he was found not guilty, though? It's because his defense attorneys knew the relationship between police and the black community had been so bad and the trust had been lost and gone for so long that it was easy to believe that perhaps O.J. Simpson was framed or the victim of a police framing or something like that. Now, fast forward, right? We've got Kyle Rittenhouse this week. And it's split among the same racial lines and for the same reasons. It's not exactly the legal aspect that everybody's rambling about. It's just the system in general, right? If Kyle Rittenhouse was a 17-year-old black kid, do you think we'd be talking about self-defense and all of this stuff? Do you think it would have the same reaction? Because if the answer is, even if you hesitate for a second, that's a problem. So it's just trying to think outside of yourselves for a few moments to understand that some people have a little bit of a different, I guess, reality based on how they've grown up. Michael Shea does Weekend Update for SNL. He has a new stand-up special out, and I thought it was a pretty poignant point I watched over the weekend where he said, you know, he was talking about Colin Kaepernick and kneeling for the flag and things like that. Another very controversial thing south of the border. But he was thinking, he said, you know, I love the anthem and I love America because of America's history. And I also don't love America because of America's history. So it's just a different perspective that people have to kind of deal with. And it's easy to dismiss other people's opinions because you don't understand them or you don't want to. But I don't know. I don't know how that helps us. 11:41 here. Taking your text until, I guess, for a few more minutes here. We're also going to hear more about the throne speech coming up before the end of the show as well. Just another text. That white Bronco was the first police chase I saw on a floor model TV. I think that's what sparked the show Cops. I think you're right. But yeah, just relating that verdict to one we saw a few weeks ago. Another text talking about the debate between police services board and, you know, giving a debate to both sides of the vaccine debate. Just want to press once again that there is no both sides of the COVID-19 vaccine debate. The vaccines are safe and effective. That's it. There's some issues with myocarditis and some other issues as well, but still the experts will tell you that you're more likely to get all these things from COVID, much worse than you will from a vaccine. Yeah. There's another text. Michael Shea has been on Late Night for years since Jon Stewart's show. Yes, very, very wonderful comedian. We have a six-year-old. We will wait for a few months to get her shot. Mom and dad and grandparents are all double vaxxed. We're not opposed, but do wish to see what the history of shots brings. That's from Kevin. And Kevin, we heard from an Ottawa pediatrician here earlier on in the show as well. And, you know, there are some parents with concerns and questions and things like that. But the bottom line from Dr. Kathy Cayley earlier this morning was knowledge is power. Seek out that knowledge in the best places that you know how. Ottawa Public Health is your best resource right now. They can help you out. They'll let you know. But everybody, all the experts saying that this is the best thing to do for your kids right now. Get the shot, be protected against the COVID-19 vaccine and anything else that might pop up. We're going to take a quick break. Thank you for your text. All right, one more. Stop trying to make the Kyle Rittenhouse situation about race. This was a white person in an altercation with other white people. Race is not a factor despite how much the mainstream media tries to push their racialized agenda. Again, no name. There's no racialized agenda. The kid had an AR-15 and he drove to a Black Lives Matter protest looking for a fight. That's why, like, race becomes an issue. I don't understand. And yeah, race also becomes an issue because we were talking about the typical kind of justice system. If Kyle Rittenhouse is black, please tell me what you think happens. And it's not the same. This is Ottawa at Work. We're going to hear more about the throne speech when we come back. That coming up this afternoon from the Trudeau government. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Andrew Pinsett, in for Leslie Roberts, with you until noon today. This is...